Well, it's a very special day for BizNews, our 12th birthday, and lovely to be talking to Cobus Forster, the chief executive of ArcelorMittal, because there's a bit of a historical connection here. Those of you who know BizNews and know me realize that I come from a place called Newcastle, and Newcastle's future is hanging in the balance. Cobus has done pretty much everything possible, and we'll find out. We'll try and join the dots and find out whether Newcastle is going to be able to keep its ArcelorMittal plant, its steel plant, going, and the impact if it is not able to. But I guess, Cobus, the best place to start is to look at your recent financial results. You guys are now really bleeding, and you've telegraphed the reasons for it. But in a nutshell, if you could just unpack for us very briefly why you dropped another billion rand in the last 6 months that you reported on.
Good day, Alec, and happy birthday. Yes, I think the two main issues is obviously, I mean, internationally, steel is in a crisis now for 2 years. I mean, prices at all time low, and then domestically demand is low. So we saw our sales volumes, you know, drop 11%, prices drop 7%. So if your revenue is down by 17%, and cost doesn't react to the same extent, it's difficult. I think the positive side is, despite the losses, from a cash perspective, we're still pretty much flat. And we've been able to do that over the past 2 years, while, as you say, bleeding on the earnings line. Cash-wise, we sort of remain our position.
How do you manage that? Because not everybody's an accountant, and the immediate view would be, crumbs, these guys have lost a billion rand, and yet their cash in the bank hasn't fallen. How does that happen?
I mean, so what we do, we dispose of non-core stuff, whether it's property, whether it is old dumps, reworks our materials. We reset our working capital levels. So it's all of those, and most of that's it's of a permanent nature. So it's not funnies that will catch you in the next 6 months.
All right. Well, the story of ArcelorMittal, though, is that you've got a market in South Africa that is declining. People are not buying as much steel as they used to. Have you got any, are you able to quantify how much the demand has fallen by in, say, the last 5 years?
I think in our results we said over the last 17 years, we dropped by 7 years. We dropped by 18% in consumption levels. I mean, 18% doesn't sound high, but you should have grown by 20% over that period, and most probably over the same period, we most probably add 40% capacity. So that's all aggravating the position.
And the Newcastle plant, which is a long steel plant, can you just explain what's different there to the other side of your business, which is the flat steel?
Well, firstly, long products is more for the construction infrastructure type of development. So the demand along that side is different, where the flats is more automotive, yellow goods, and those type of things, piping. So it's two different markets. From a production perspective and a market perspective, there you have the mini mills in South Africa, which produce about, say, 50%, and Newcastle about the other 50%. And the capacity in the longs is most probably double the demand in South Africa. And as you are well aware, our competitors there have the luxury of the scrap policy, which give them a substantial 35% input costs benefit.
So construction is under pressure. Manufacturing is under pressure. There doesn't seem to be much light at the end of that tunnel, given that South Africa's economy is growing by less than the population growth. You're losing money on your longs, in other words, the part of steel that supplies those areas. And at some point in time, you've got to make a call. You've made the call twice already, that you're going to close Newcastle down. Now you put a line in the sand, the 30th of September, but all is not lost yet. First of all, though, tell us, 30th of September, why have you now finally said this is it and no further?
Alec, I mean, you know, the IDC has given us cash to fund the losses of longs up to the end of September. So that undertaking still stands and that timeline still stands. I think what we did with our announcement is just to sensitize people. You know, if the drop dead date is 30 September, you need to start doing things early in August to start pushing down the supply chain and all of those. And while we're still talking to government, I mean, nothing happened on the PPS system. Nothing happened on Eskom yet. So we've lodged an appeal on that. Transnet's performance was probably down 50% of what it used to be. So, and the tariff introduction is very slow. And where we have tariffs, the contravention of those things is just not policed well. So we have a line in the sand. That's our date. They've got time to do what they have to do. If not, we've developed an alternative. How do we get the balance sheet fixed? And we will dispose of all the assets that's not contributing to the flat core part of the business.
So in essence, what we have here is a part of your business that the IDC, the Industrial Development Corporation, which is owned by government, is funding while it does its due diligence to see whether it has got a different plan to the one that you've been implementing. But as a private sector business, you can't keep losing R1 billion every 6 months. Is that, when you join the dots, is that exactly the point that we're at?
100%, Alec. And I think many of these, the causes or the root causes of the problem in the longs, I say is government's problem. So it's fine that they need to take a view. And if not commercially, we cannot support it any longer. We've been losing billions in trying to fix that. And most probably we've done it too long.
So what is going to change? Let's just say that the IDC say, or someone in government says, hey, we got Trump tariffs, we got a very uncertain world now. We don't know if actually we're going to be able to import steel in the way we did in the past, or it might be dumped on our country. There's just so much uncertainty that perhaps we take a view at in the cabinet, we cannot possibly lose our longs operation. What would have to change to make it sustainable? In other words, how would they be able to use taxpayers' money, if they were to take it over, more efficiently and not just become another black hole?
Alec, I think firstly, one has to understand that in 4 years from now, South Africa will be short of scrap. So you will need beneficiation to feed either through thick iron or whatever the demand of the steel assets. So yeah, we can let it go short term, but medium term, everybody's going to realize that we've got rid of an asset that we now need, and to rebuild that is almost impossible. From a taxpayer money perspective, I mean, my argument is, why should I support Transnet? Why should Newcastle pay for the scrap discount that other people get, that ultimately the scrap collector is paying for? So somebody must pay for it. And at the moment, Newcastle is paying for everything. And I think that's unfair. Why should Transnet tariffs be the same as road tariffs and operating at 35% of requirements? Surely you can't expect us to pay that. And the taxpayer will pay for it to repair the roads if 62% of our raw materials coming by road.
Well, I'm talking to you from Pietermaritzburg, where we have family, and we had a family celebration over the weekend. But my goodness, to get here from Durban, it's extreme. They've been working on those roads for a long time now. And the locals tell me, well, it's because of all the trucks. And the trucks are chewing up the roads, and stuff that should be going on rail is not going on rail. It goes on the roads. And so you have these interminable delays, which is, of course, in itself, destructive to the economy. So it's a problem here about not joining the dots as a nation. You know, I was thinking about our conversation this morning, and I thought back, well, the two issues that are making it very difficult for you, leave government out of it for the moment, are Transnet, which is a disaster, and Eskom, which is a disaster. And then I look back at the reason why Eskom is so expensive and Transnet is such a mess, and thank the Guptas for that, and the Guptas and the stealing and the theft and the hundreds of billions that they stole. And yet, those dots have not been joined, and these fellows are still sitting in Dubai, living off the fat of the pillaging. It's extraordinary, isn't it, that we find it difficult in our country to kind of put one thing behind the other and then understand the context.
Alec, you're 100% correct. This is not an AMSA issue or an AMSA crisis or even a steal. This is an economic crisis. I mean, if you look at the smelters, ferrochrome, ferroalloys, I mean, I think there's, I may be wrong, but I think at least 14 has been shut down. And it's purely cost of electricity. I mean, we've got all the raw materials here, but we can't produce that. To put the road transport in perspective, we receive around 370 trucks per day of raw materials into our sites. Now, you can just imagine the logistical nightmare that is for a plant that's designed to receive trains, tip trains into the conveyor system. And now everything has been offloaded in felts. You have to have yellow equipment, trucks, TLBs. It's not the way it should work.
How does that get fixed, though? Do you have to start at the beginning with Transnet to turn that around? Or is it ever able to be fixed?
I think what we've offered them is also to assist, that we run part of the security part. Because it's a cable theft issue, it's a lack of locos, sometimes a lack of people. So it's a magnitude of problems, of which cable theft, I think, is the biggest thing. So one has to increase the security. Well, most probably, I don't know if possible, but you have to add a bit of diesel locos to relieve certain points from time to time. But it's at the moment, it's a very intense daily management process to sometimes not stop your operations.
All right, so let's look at the worst case scenario to start with. The Newcastle plant gets closed down. How many people would be affected by that?
Directly about 3,500 people.
Indirectly?
No, indirectly is difficult. I mean, there's been studies done, ADAC people talk about 80,000 people. I can tell you about how many downstream companies will close down because they use our steel to produce components. You'll have a mine or two or three shut down. You have some quarries shutting down on the upstream side. So the impact is massive. You know, people don't think about the two kindergartens that will close, B&B and all of those things. So those are the type of things, but that is well understood by government. The social impact and the social cost, they've done the numbers. It's much more than the trying to support and resolve the Newcastle problem. Are they well aware of that? And I think they're slow, but they're trying.
And the best case scenario?
Well, the best case scenario is everybody do something that's a bit more fair. You don't have to have a 35% discount on scrap. Maybe it's a 10%. Transnet don't need to ask us $28 per ton to transport iron ore to Newcastle. Maybe it's $18. Eskom can give us 30. So all of those things can contribute up to the point where you can break even. There's no leakage. And at some point, demand will help and the volume will solve the problem.
So it sounds like if government is well aware of the social impact, and this country can ill afford to lose another 80,000 jobs with the downstream included, then some plan might be made. Would you be part of that plan? Let's just say the IDC says, well, we've been told by Cabinet we've got to keep it going. Would you work with them, and under what kind of conditions?
I think we are open for a solution, Alec. I think, look at myself, I'm representing three parties here. I mean, one is the shareholders, the other one is the company, and the other one is South Africa. Surely we will find a solution that can satisfy broad stakeholders. Shareholders are very open to find a solution. And prepared to look at everything, anything. You know, shareholders as to date on a shareholders loan perspective, Mittal has put in 5.5 billion rand into ArcelorMittal.
Sure. And given that it's such a big multinational company, have there been similar incidents around the world or similar examples around the world of what you're going through here that you can draw on those lessons?
I don't think necessarily all the headwinds we have. I mean, you have the demand issues, you've got policy issues all over the world, but I think we've got everything simultaneously. I mean, if you look at the group results came out last week, I mean, as a group, we're performing exceptionally well. Balance sheet is very strong, core assets, well-developed markets, and growth assets in developing markets. They grow their Indian footprint substantially. And then a big automotive focus.
There's nothing wrong with a business, with a top business. It's environmental factors. Now, what was interesting to me today was reading President Cyril Ramaphosa's response now that we've got Trump tariffs that are coming through soon. And he was talking about various ways that we have to find new markets and we have to change our thinking on a lot of aspects. Has any of that change in thinking, reassessment, played or influenced the position that you're in right now? One might have thought that this is such a seismic shift in the world that it has to have some kind of impact.
No, it will have an impact. Right? I think the difficulty is people don't fully understand the impact. I mean, it's not easy to find new markets. Whatever business, if you're wine producing, yes, you can find some of your products to a different, but it will be at different returns. If it's at better returns or the same, you would have been there already. So it will come at a cost. At the moment, where the things will land is difficult to understand. Hopefully in the next 3 months or so, things will pan out. Because you also have to look at the relevant tariffs. I mean, we export some stuff to the U.S., special products and stuff. 30% will make it impossible. But our competitors is Taiwan, I think one of the Scandinavian countries. So if they also had 30%, I mean, then it becomes an inflationary thing for the U.S. But if we had 30 and somebody else at 50, then relative it becomes a problem. So at the moment, it's difficult to fully understand where things will settle and the real impact. And then I think hopefully it will pan out in the next few months.
It's very interesting the point that you made there, because I think that's been forgotten by many, is that sure, we won't be able to send in our products, South African products, as we did in the past with no or very low tariffs. But our competitors are also struggling a little bit. So I guess, as you say, wait and see. How long do you think it's going to take before we understand before you understand whether that export market can be reopened for you?
I mean, Alex, I'm a simple steelmaker. How the politicians will sort this out, I would think most probably will take a few months.
But as a simple steelmaker, are you disappointed in the way that our politicians have been handling this?
Yeah, I think so. I think you confuse a trade policy issue with a political issue here, and I think it's very difficult for people responsible for trade policy to find a trade solution if that's not necessarily the main issue. So I think that I can to an extent understand from a DTIC perspective the complexity that you have to deal with, because it's not your trade policy issues. And secondly, you also negotiate with a giant. So I think it's difficult.
And a very unruly giant at that, given who's actually sitting in the White House. But Quibus, if Newcastle's plant closes down, let's just say, or if you are not involved in whatever resuscitation plan the IDC, the Industrial Development Corporation, has for the plant, what happens then to ArcelorMittal South Africa? What are you going to be doing to to get to a business that is sustainable?
Our flat business, as I said, is quite unique. Good product range needs some investment. So what we said in our sense, you know, we've always held onto certain assets, like a Saldanha Steel. Saldanha Steel is a very high potential, futuristic, green DRI, green steel asset. It will cost you not a lot of money to convert it to that, where a new asset will cost you 10 times the amount of capex. So I think what we will say is let's monetize that earlier. Let's get somebody to run it with us or to buy it, and let's put the money into our core asset, get rid of the debt, and then invest where we have, due to the leakage that we have been suffering for the many years, have maybe neglected in some of our assets.
Now, I'm just wondering from a broader perspective of South African business people who'd be watching this and saying, this guy's been through the ringer. He's had some very tough calls to make. Why is he still hanging in there? What is keeping him awake or tap dancing to work in the morning that he does see a future, given all of the obstacles that do exist?
Alec, as I said, the core business, the flat business, if you can just exclude longs, can be a very successful growth business. And at some point in life, we may see some economic recovery. So for that part, is solid. I think as an organization, we've tried our best to try and fix the longs. If we have to take the harsh decision, well, actually, we have taken it. We have to deal with it. But medium, longer term, there's a good prospects for the core asset of this organization. Alec, we've been very clear to them. This is the amount of money we need up to the end of September. If you want the end of September to be the end of November or the end of January, it's a different number. We will not carry any further cash losses of that business because it will put the broader business at severe risk. And as an executive, we cannot do that and we cannot allow it. So they're quite clear about that. They're quite clear that 30 December actually is early August, that you have to start stopping the blast furnace, you have to start stopping the upstream, stop all those trucks from coming in. That at 30 September, from a cash flow perspective, you're neutral.
In our business portfolio, we have Afrimat as one of the stocks. I had a question at our webinar about the impact on Afrimat of AMSA as the developments, and in particular the close down at Newcastle. Is this going to be a significant impact given that they do supply iron ore to you?
Alec, I think it would be unfair for me to comment on the impact of Afrimat or Andries' business. It will have an impact on the amount of iron ore that we will consume, from how we will change our supply portfolio. I think it's not the right forum to discuss that. We'll have a better ability to mix our supply chain and actually make it cheaper, even for a Vanderbijl Park. I mean, we use. Iron ore as a portfolio. So we get X amount from all the different mines. We try to optimize in terms of technical specifications. Sometimes it's a logistical nightmare if you can't get from some, and it's a price issue. And we mix and match that. It's the same if we don't have a Newcastle, we would go for the cheapest option for Philibert Park. No, I think first, I think we've been transparent and clear last with where we're going with logs. That position has not changed. We really open for dialogue and discussion, and we are doing that on a consistent basis with the authorities. But we've got a decent plan B. If the DD doesn't work out, we can recapitalize the place from within almost by disposing of all the non-value-adding assets as well as all the long assets. No. That's obviously, I think the retrenchment is inevitable. And then the closure cost, one normally tries to minimize that as soon as possible. You've got a lot asset footprint. Like in Newcastle, Aga Saldanha, when we closed it, cost us 100 million a year. Today, it's break even.
So you've got all of those worked into your numbers, and you've got a path forward. But if government wants to keep the longs business open, then they've got to come to the party now. You can't anymore. Kobus Wasser is the chief executive of ArcelorMittal. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.